Ho, 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 hello, and welcome to Bah Humbug, the Christmas Movies podcast. I'm your host, Helen O'Hara, and today I'm delighted to be talking about the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, a show that doesn't know what Christmas is, but knows that it's here. Joining me to discuss this is an old friend, Radio 1 and 1 Extras film critic, Ali Plum. How are you doing?
Hello, ho, 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 ho. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to see you're wearing your, I think, diehard Christmas jumper today, which is only appropriate, of course.
Absolutely bang on. And on the back it says, greetings, seasons, which is the best thing about it.
That is awesome. Yes. So we're going to get into this this one-off Marvel holiday special. It's pretty simple. It's getting on for Christmas in the Guardians of the Galaxy world in the giant empty space head that is nowhere. And Chris Pratt's Peter Quill is feeling kind of melancholy because he's missing his girlfriend. You know, he's missing Christmas because he's in space. It's all a bit much. So his equally empty space-headed friends, Drax, Dave Bautista, and Mantis, Paul Clementiev, come up with a fantastic and foolproof plan to cheer him up. They are going to get him the world's greatest Christmas present. His hero, Kevin Bacon. Cue some madness, some light kidnapping, and some surprisingly catchy songs. So, Ali, what did you think of this?
I was actually quite happy with this one. And the reason why I say that is because I had a few people online on Twitter generally going, it's not very good, bit of a disappointment. I am grateful they did that, I guess, because I went in and thought, this is a laugh. It kicks off with, you know, an obvious nod to the Star Wars Holiday Special with the cartoon and the animation. It's very knowing. It's very James Gunn, very winky. It's got the Marvel logo wreathed in big twinkly lights and there's snow. It's both having its Christmas cake, ho-ho, and eating it too. It's saying, we know this is cheesy and silly, but let's also just be cheesy and silly. And I like seeing a Marvel unit of entertainment that doesn't have a big bad antagonist that's about to club you over the head, end the universe, poison all your family. It's just, frankly, a male white man who's doing pretty well, all things considered, having a sad day. And if that can't inspire you, I don't know what can. No, it's good. It's fun. It's sentimental. It's silly. It's got a lot of your favorite characters and two baby brains, as I like to call Drax and Mantis, baby braining around Earth. And I started watching it to begin with the sort of negative hat on, going, okay, what are people hating? And I thought the opening song with the incredibly rotating limb was a good laugh, had some nice jokes, you know, Santa Claus, Mrs. Claus and her pole, all that stuff. I thought it was catchy.
Very.
And I also thought the soundtrack, full stop, was just great. Maybe I'd have cut out the Pogues, but otherwise, yeah, great.
We sort of expect nothing less from a Guardians of the Galaxy thing, yeah, in particular. We're not going to make this into a whole Marvel Cinematic Universe spoiler. Ali has done that a lot elsewhere. I have done that a lot with Empire as well. So we won't go completely into the weeds on Marvel lore, don't worry here. But yeah, it is really, you know, these Guardians of the Galaxy films, they always have great, great music. And this is absolutely no exception. And I also love that rotating limb. I feel like it's good to remind us, or at least try to convince us, that this is not a man in some funny face mask, that it is an alien being who can do things that we cannot. I also love the throwaway gag about they just picked up these instruments this morning and instantly learned how to play them. It was so fun in just emphasizing the alienness, that it's not, I think they've called them the old 97s on the soundtrack at least, but they're not, you know, just another garage band. They're an alien garage band. It's different.
Yeah, I can really hear and feel, I mean, you always can, but James Gunn throughout this one, and it's just a bit of a laugh. And I have always approached any holiday special, Christmas special, as, let's be honest, not being the best example of whatever particular genre. Like, you've got your Frasers and your, who else do really good Christmas episodes? I mean, some people love the Friends ones, but by and large,
Friends was always better at Thanksgiving than Christmas for
yeah,
me, right?
But I'm never coming in going, this will be the apex of, you know, whatever it is. because there's only so many things you can say. I think they did a pretty good job. They progressed the plot quite nicely. Again, not to get too much into the lore of it, into the weeds of it. You know, they canonized, I think it was deleted scene from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, i.e. that Pom Klementiev's Mantis is actually a sibling, half-sibling to Peter Quill, which is pretty neat. But yeah, soundtrack,
yeah.
Tick, cheesy cartoon stuff, great. A brand new comedy Christmas song, which is very hard to pull off these days. Double check. I was pleased. I was happy.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, this is something that you and I have talked about before, that, you know, the Marvel films at their best have characters that you would just be happy to hang out with and just be happy to watch, you know, sit around having a meal together, because they are fun, interesting people and their interactions are fun and interesting. And I feel like this is exactly what we said we wanted. This is exactly that. It is just a kind of, you know, a non, as you say, world-threatening, non-baddie-driven caper that focuses on these characters and gives us a little bit more of their kind of, you know, off-duty lives, if you will. Like, what do they do when they're not saving the galaxy? Well, it turns out they harass major movie stars. But that's something we didn't know before.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cute doing a and introducing for Kevin Bacon, which is so tongue-in-cheek. The whole thing is so tongue-in-cheek, but wow, introducing Kevin Bacon is just fantastic. And if you want to get into it, it's kind of surreal to see Flula Borg, who you and I know because we're super nerds, but he is, I think, best known for being a stand-up comedian. He's German, but he's also been in The Suicide Squad, another James Gunn production, but also in Pitch Perfect 2. He's a very funny guy, and he plays the barman when they get absolutely wasted at that Christmas party. You've also got other Marvel winks. I think there's a reference in a poster. It's very blink and you'll miss it, but there's a reference to a movie that Kumail Nanjiani's character from Eternals is in.
Yes, Kingo. Kingo's Christmas, I think it is.
So there's that sort of fun. And then if we get uber meta, isn't Kevin Bacon totally by himself, totally normal, in his giant, very stale pad? Let's be honest, I don't like the way you've made your house, mate. Doesn't feel very Christmassy. he's watching, you know, aliens abduct Santa Claus, or what's it called?
I think it's Santa Claus versus the Martians.
Of course. And the concept of that is that some aliens want to know what Christmas is like, so they kidnap Santa. So it's all very meta and cute and all that stuff. And I think, frankly, 45 minutes of bonus content, yes, please. I know it's quote-unquote free, but yeah. And I love how they shot this during the same schedule as Volume 3. So from what we've seen of the trailer of Volume 3, which is coming out at the time of recording next year, 2023, I bet they really enjoyed just having some fun, because the trailer seems to be tears, crying, someone's died, someone's about to die. Ah! And here's just goofy nonsense where you know, Nebula is going, here's Bucky's arm. I know you wanted it from Infinity War.
I mean, I love that. The idea that the Guardians all get their perfect Christmas presents in the end. And yes, of course, Rocket had to get Bucky's arm, which he's been eyeing up this whole time. I love his weird obsession with prosthetics. That's his thing. You know, he's just got this little hobby of collecting everybody's prosthetics or just stealing them. I don't even know if he keeps them. Like, he obviously gave that eye to Thor. He's like, well, I don't need it. I just wanted it. And yeah, I'm intrigued to see what becomes of the arm if it turns up again. But so there's all these little tie-ins, and you can, as you say, take all of this stuff from the wider MCU and take all this stuff from their history. But equally, if this is the first thing you've ever seen of the Guardians, which God help you if it is, but if it is, you know that there's this bunch of weirdos and they care about each other and, you know, they're doing their best. They're doing their best to celebrate Christmas in a giant empty space head in the sky with their own giant space heads that are equally empty.
I think if this was the first thing you'd seen, you'd think it was dreadful. The way I'm looking at it now, I'll be honest with you, you just go, what a load of self-indulgent tosh. I don't get any of it. Whereas I'm watching the little green, like, doodad that Yondu gets given in the animated ending and going, oh, that is actually on his little desk in the first film. And you go, well, I find that very rewarding, but who really cares how Star-Lord, who got his twin guns? Us, of course, but otherwise, it reminded me just a tiny bit of the ending of the Tomb Raider movie starring Alicia Vikander, mm-hmm. where at the end she gets two guns and you go, okay, good for you. Good for you. But for those that are in the tank, and I think, you know, essentially all of what we've seen over the past 2 years of pandemic, Disney Plus splurging, the majority of the Disney Plus Marvel content has been for the heads, for the geeks, for the nerds. But of course, and I think I'm slightly concerned that people will watch Volume 3 and go, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the holiday special. I'm not across any of this. Because people watch the Doctor Strange 2 and went, what happened to Wanda? Wow, things got really out of hand. I have no memory of this. And I was sitting there in the movie going, I'm going to say this as quickly and quietly as I can, but this is the plot of WandaVision. So I wonder whether what we've seen here will actually genuinely have some sort of ramifications. Strokes chin. Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I assume that we're going to see, and again, not to get crazy far into the weeds, but I feel like we're going to see them, you know, managing the nowhere, maybe. We're going to see, obviously, this the Groot that we see here is slightly grown up from the last time we saw him. He has developed further as a, he is now a bit more, he's just bigger. He's muscly, if that's the right word for a tree.
He's not quite chonky. He's just a bit of a unit now. He's been at the gym and... in the first film and in the recent volume two, I didn't want to, you know, get in a scrap with him. But he's wide.
He's filled out, as a young man, as a young tree, he says filled out. So I guess that's the sort of Groot that we're going to see going into volume three, judging from that trailer. Yes, there's a lovely bit with just Rocket Raccoon getting his dream thing for Christmas. He doesn't have a lot to do otherwise, I suspect, because he's a very, very expensive character to animate. And, you know, on this kind of thing, there must be some kind of limit on the budget. So I guess that makes sense. But I did love spending more time with the double act of Drax and Mantis, who are just, I mean, they're well-meaning, I think, maybe not in Drax's case all the time, but they have some kind of, you know, morality to them. And yet they are just dependably...
dumb?
Dumb. Yeah, it's not a bad word for it, is it?
I think, frankly, this is about as much of them as I could have handled. I think if you overextend Mantis, I think, and Drax, they're to me, they're hundreds and thousands on the cake. They're not the flavoring of the cake. Mm-hmm. And this was about as much as I could handle. And some of the jokes, you're like, yes, I know you're going to say that. You know, the whole like, ooh, the cloaking. Should I press it? Ooh, I said I did. Oh, looks like I'm doing it now. But again, you're in the tank. It's a bit of fun. And I quite like seeing it for a moment played for very dark laughs. Earth is now a world where there is a bright green Hulk lawyer. And, you know, in theory, thanks to Eternals, there's a giant half being that's floating out of the sea. They know what weird stuff looks like, Endgame, et cetera, et cetera. But still, if you see a spaceship floating over LA, kind of darkly funny, kind of enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed, for what it's worth, the, you know, Hollywood... oh, look at Steve, photos, all that stuff. Particularly seeing Go, is that a GoBot? So not a Transformers.
A GoBot, yes, I believe so. And I believe that's one of the big Marvel stuntmen inside, one of the 87 crew stuntmen inside, getting beaten up by Drax, yes.
Great fun. I enjoyed all that dorkiness and, you know, I particularly like Drax as a gamer being mistaken for Kratos from God of War, which is...
yes. I recognize that reference, and you know I'm not a gamer. You had to talk me through the story of The Last of Us, which you very kindly did once. But even I got that reference. I thought that was clever.
I felt pretty bad for Drax because what have you got to do? Save the universe a couple of times. How are you going to get famous enough to be noticed by the guy in the street? Particularly when Captain Marvel's over there, they know who she is, and they're pretty sure they know who Ant-Man is. But who's this? That is Drax. I mean, anyway, his PR team need maybe... to buck their ideas up. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, I enjoyed all that sequence. And the sort of almost Ferris Bueller-y bouncing behind and in front of the fences. Would you agree with me though, Helen, that it got a bit dark when the cops just go, yeah, I'm going to shoot you. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a weird moment that, because I wasn't quite sure. I've watched this twice, and the first time I wasn't quite sure if the Guardians killed a bunch of cops, and I was like, okay, that's not ideal. But then when I watched it back, and I was like, okay, they didn't kill anybody, but equally the cops pulled their guns on these strange people. That's also not ideal. I mean, it's all too perhaps realistic of, you know, a certain trigger-happy tendencies in certain law enforcement officers. But equally, it's you're right, it's a darker thing than you would expect to be in your holiday special.
It's funny. I wouldn't bring it up because obviously it's big, goofy nonsense. But at the same time, Gunn does like to play with dark, naughty, cheeky stuff. And in that moment, I went, hang on, where are we positioned? What line are we dancing across? Just to be clear, but I think when you have a character that can just go sleep, it just about still works. I, for one, was glad to see that Drax can just flip cars like they're, you know, donuts popping into his mouth. Not a big deal. But that whole sequence felt a little bit like, yes, we should have a fight. We should have a fight here, because otherwise it's a little bit not Marvel-y enough. We need to have some sort of scrap. Because, yeah, she could have just run up, tapped him on the shoulder and gone, we're friends now.
Sleep,
come with me. I thought it was cute how when he thinks of a hero, Kevin Bacon immediately goes to Cockney War Private. I was like, that is fantastic. I love that.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this. And come join us.
Can we like give some props to Kevin Bacon? Because it's been kind of a running joke in the Guardians movies that, you know, Peter Quill loved Footloose, that he kind of imprinted on this character that he also once saved the universe by dancing. So, you know, there's this hilarious kind of misunderstanding of what Footloose is for a start. And then to kind of build on that in this way and have Kevin Bacon taking the mickey out of himself just from soup to nuts here, slagging off acting as a profession.
Yeah.
Just, I thought he was wonderful. I loved him.
Yeah, double thumbs up to Kevin. Let's ignore the fact that he was in X-Men First Class and the whole like sort of wibbly wobbly multiverse nonsense. Forget that. Forget it.
Doesn't matter.
Him being talked round by James Gunn's brother, whose character name I always forget.
Yes, his name is
Kangle. Him. The one with Yondu's arrow hat was quite nice, and I bought it because they didn't have much time to do what they needed to do. And him turning around and playing the song. If you're really into the MCU, and I will leave it here in the geekiness side, but I am Groot.
Kraglin.
Did you know, by the way, that all of the ship names are named after pop stars?
I know that the Milano was, so that does make a certain amount of sense. So who else have we got?
So you've got Milano, right? And this one now you've got Bowie. But we've also had Banatar, as in Pat Benatar.
Right, yes, yeah.
So the three ships have been Bowie, Benatar, and Milano. Think of all the kids that have watched this, born in the year 2000, and have gone, not a clue, means nothing to me. I just don't care.
Maybe it'll encourage them to go and search, you know? Maybe they'll learn something.
Yeah, who is this David Bowie? Did you enjoy as much as I did the extra upgrade that we saw with Cosmo, the USSR dog, with the slight Russian accent? Very up. Really enjoy any talking dog, I'll be honest with you. And if there could be tons more of that character, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, I didn't see Cosmo in the trailer for Guardians 3, so I don't know if that's a character we're going to see a lot more of. But I think it was Maria Bakalova, wasn't it, from Borat, who does the voice. And yet that was just so weird and charming. And what the heck is, there's a talking dog now as well as the raccoon or whatever with the gun. I mean, you're right. If you came into this as a complete newbie to the Guardians, it's not going to be the easiest thing in the world to digest.
It's like a bit, I mean,
God bless him.
Particularly looking at that alien rat with a bow on it being slapped in front of you. But going back to the uber geekiness, if you've watched the I Am Groot shorts, we learn about Groot's love of papier-mâché and, you know, making stuff. And what a fantastic knowingly knowing joke of Kraglin getting a maquette Blue Peter thing of the moment he is having. It's just...
I thought that was so weird and so... like unlike anything I'd quite seen before.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I mean, the fact that basically as they open their presents from Groot, each one in turn, it kind of tells the story of the entire show you've just watched. Even the bit that he absolutely wasn't there for and has no way of knowing about that we know of. up to the moment of, yes, opening the present. And that's the papier-mâché he's made. Is he magic? Is Groot magic?
I think he might be magic. I also think...
I don't need answers.
Is it maybe a knowing nod to this? It's been happening for about 10, 12 years now. This habit of going, no matter how schlocky the movie, no matter how short the movie, no matter how insubstantial a movie is, the credits end with a sort of like flip book of all the big moments in the movie, as if to remind you as you walk out the door, oh yeah, and there was that bit, and there was that bit. And it seemed to be, and I'm overanalyzing, sort of a knowing nod to, yeah, we are doing that a lot, aren't we? Yeah. Maybe this 43 minute thing isn't worth it, but let's get away with it anyway.
I mean, but it's just so silly and fun and weird.
Even jokes like, how on earth do you get reception? Coming from the guy that says a lot of EE. You'd know, Kevin. You'd know.
At least they didn't name check EE in it. Like we just did. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Have we lost or gained sponsorship? I can't tell.
I don't know. We didn't have any to begin with, so let's hope we've gained it. it's just, I thought it was just a really nice mix of weirdness and cosmic stuff and the sort of all that fish out of water stuff in LA. Mm. And then like a little bit of genuine heart kind of sneaking in, as you say, at the end. You know, they do care about each other. They are a bunch of a-holes, as they kept saying in the first film. They are all outcasts in their own way and all kind of little lost souls in their own way. But they sort of find a way to work together. So it does really lend itself to a Christmas movie. You know, what do you do with like a Captain America Christmas movie? Like everyone he knows and loves is dead. And it's a difficult one to kind of imagine what that would look like. But the Guardians...
yeah.
Something about it kind of works.
Yeah. Captain America is sitting on a rocking chair sipping some eggnog for about 20 minutes and then it fades to black. Whereas this one gets to have a sort of Hollywood actors are awful. It gets to again have its Christmas cake and eat it, because even the little journey around Hollywood where they're trying to find the famous people's houses to get to Kevin Bacon, you see Margot Robbie, couldn't be more DC. John Cena, couldn't be more DC. Arnold Schwarzenegger's face pops up. It's like, it really is very like winky, winky, winky. I suppose what it is, trying to justify why people were upset about this, is it is so throwaway that it must have knocked people off their perch a bit, like going, hang on, what? I didn't know you could do this. I didn't know you could actually change the tone. And I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I think we need to be doing more of this. And of course, a similar one-shot type thing was the more recent Halloween horror black and white Michael Giacchino horror-twinged one. And if you're close to 30 movies in and at one point the biggest movie of all time, if that's all under your belt for the MCU, please do bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
Please.
Use your power to make things like, as you say, Werewolf by Night. Use your power to make some aliens go to LA for Christmas.
Exactly.
And kidnap a beloved movie star. Use your power to do this kind of bizarre stuff. And you know, this idea of... again, aliens getting involved in Christmas is something. I mean, I'm not saying that Santa Claus versus the Martians is a great Christmas movie. I'm really not. But I do think there's kind of unmined potential in this fish out of water with Christmas that we haven't actually seen done very much. You know, I mean, the closest you get is sort of Elf, where he's absolutely a fish out of water, but he's also the Christmassiest person who has ever lived. So it's a kind of a weird way of approaching that. But, you know, you don't often get this oh, what is Christmas kind of vibe that we have here. And so it did feel fresh and different and something we hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I am now going to casually recommend this one to people. And I'm glad of that because I think quite a few MCU products on Disney Plus lately have been a bit like, if you're dead keen on the character or if you're obsessed with X actor, whereas this one, I'm like, yeah, go have a good time. And in fact, we had a bit of this, obviously, Christmas Marvel stuff with Hawkeye, which deserves a mention because Iron Man 3, Hawkeye, and now this are the three Marvel products that have acknowledged the presence of Christmas. But what this one does, and this is, I think, the best example of totally flipping us on our heads, is Christmas has become, obviously, news just in from 1960, totally commodified, religion-free shopping festival for a lot of people, for good or ill. But this one actually made me go, oh yeah, there's a baby in a manger with hay, and you see Drax's face and you go, yeah, that is weird. What's the deal with that? And I thought, oh, actually, that's a pretty nice rug pull.
Yeah, the fact that they took that moment to have that moment
exactly
in this kind of crazy film is something extraordinary, actually. The reason for the season, if you're one of those people, is there, you know. And it's kind of, it's nicely handled. It doesn't have them making a flippant joke, so it's not going to offend people. But at the same time, it does, as you say, kind of make it seem a bit odd. So, yeah. You know.
You suddenly see it from an alien's perspective and you go, we are pretty eccentric. When it comes down to it, from an alien's point of view, baby, donkeys, three old men with frankincense, myrrh. Anyway, I enjoyed this. Is that a review they'd put on the poster? I enjoyed it. But I enjoyed it. And as Christmas specials go, I think it's up there, frankly.
I think, I was trying to think, and holiday specials, now is it political correctness gone mad, but I think it is very much a Christmas special once you get into it. But I enjoyed it. I think my personal favourite Christmas episodes of TV shows, if you will, are Father Ted, A Christmassy Ted.
Of course, yes.
A classic. And the Blackadder Christmas Carol episode, which is magnificent.
I think I've actually written an article on this, so I'm quickly looking it up. Here we go.
Did it at Empire once, right?
Undoubtedly. This is my best 15 Christmas episodes. Number one, Christmassy Ted. Gavin and Stacey I put up there as well.
Right, yes.
2000 and a long time ago. Christmas Carol we've mentioned with Blackadder. Merry Christmas, Mr. Bean.
Right, yes. Good call.
Yeah, all that stuff. Holiday Armadillo, I referred to earlier. Vicar of Dibley, if we get full British, jumping into the pond. But in terms of sort of self-aware, knowing, noddy animation stuff, I would shout out Community, and that's Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas from 2010, season 2.
Stop-motion animation. Beautiful Christmas.
Yeah. And Yippee-Ki-Yak, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. God, this is a well-written article. Wow.
Hey, you're quite good at this, you know.
Look at that listing stuff. Ali's got it. He's good at Googling things. Look at that.
Send me the link. I'm going to put it in the show notes so people can read it, okay? Send me the link. Done well, these can be magnificent because they're, you know, it gives you all the stuff you love about whatever TV show plus Christmassy good feelings and or bad feelings in Blackadder's case. And that is all you can wish for. And I love here, you know, I think they're making fun of the Star Wars holiday special with the title.
Yeah.
Famously, the worst Christmas special. And I talked about it on a previous episode. Go back and, well, honestly, I mean, not to blow my own horn, but I would recommend listening to that rather than watching the Star Wars holiday special, which is, oof. But the Star Wars Lego holiday special.
There you go.
There we go. That's also a good one.
That's what you need.
But yes, so this is going on our rotation is what we're saying. This is going to be, a recommendable Christmas.
I will likely watch this again next year. I think I probably will. And I think it's because it's a one-shot, so to speak. Mm. And Hawkeye is a six-episoder. I think this has a much higher chance.
Yeah.
I reckon. That and Klaus, which we've talked about a lot before.
Which we have talked about and which you love very much and rightly so. So yeah, good stuff. All right, well, I think that's it for this episode, but that is a thumbs up for the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. It'll keep you going until Guardians 3 comes out next year for those of you who are MCU diehards. But in the meantime, Ali, thank you so much for joining me and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And if you want another great mistletoe joke, There's a Futurama Christmas episode where Santa is a robot that's on a rampage and he uses a tow missile. It's really good. So amazing. Another self-aware Christmassy episode recommendation for you. I'm full of them.
Thanks very much and see you next time, everybody.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this episode of Bah Humbug. Please join us next time for more Christmas movies madness. In the meantime, I've been your host, Helen O'Hara. This podcast is edited by Ben Williams and produced by Kobe Omanaka for Stripped Media. And if you've enjoyed the pod, please do rate us with 5 shiny Christmas stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. But whatever you do, happy holidays!
Just heard a Stripped Media production.